Okay, welcome back. Hour number two on this Monday. There's a lot going on out here, and most of it you'll never hear about. It's just not covered by the mainstream media, which, unfortunately, is looked at by far too many intelligent people and who believe what they're seeing. That is not reality. They'll tell you what they think you want to hear, what they're ordered to tell you about, further programming you every step of the way. No joke. Are you there, young lady?
I'm here.
You've been sitting
Welcome
around the bus
week.
Stop all day. You've been waiting. That's very nice of you. All right. Yes, another week. We'll see what happens. I'm still waiting for them to pull the trigger on bird flu. We'll see.
Well,
it may
you know
be something else, though. Yeah.
They're having a bird flu summit in October.
Yeah, I'm running that story right now. International Bird Flu Summit. Yes. Yes.
It looks like, hey, you know, that it's a go. They'll attempt to do what they did.
Well, don't be surprised. They like to do things and keep people off balance. If Ebola doesn't sneak in the side door at the last minute, some hemorrhagic something, yeah, anything. Mm-hmm. For example, measles cases in the U.S. so far this year are triple all of last year. You don't hear about that. If it's true, and again, I must throw this caveat out there, nothing you see, hear, or read anymore can be counted on to be true.
That's right.
It's sad, but that's the truth. That is the truth. Measles cases, U.S., this year, triple all of last year already. So there you go. Here are some other headlines. I've got a video up there running exposing Trump and his warp speed mass death program. Somebody edited together a bunch of clips about that. Look for that one. It's very good. He's not going to give that up, by the way. He can't, I guess. They told him, you're going to ride this horse until its legs go out from under it. The World Health Organization is pushing for the mRNA bird flu vaccines, as you know. And what was the tally? 50 million bird flu alleged vaccines are being created right now. And I think they're mRNAs, aren't they? That's what this story is about. The WHO is pushing for mRNA bird flu vaccines. They want the mRNA in there.
Well, of course. You know, that's the up-and-coming industry. You know, they're all going to be
big.
Transition to that platform.
Right. Let's see. Here's another one. Heart failure surges 620%. Among the COVID injected. 620%.
Yeah, that was more or less predicted.
Yes. Fully vaxxed, rabidly pro-vax Fox News reporter and wife have announced that they both have bioweapon turbo cancer.
Yeah, I saw that.
Well, they didn't call it the bioweapon turbo cancer, but we all know what it is. COVID bioweapon shots caused 50% spike in all-cause mortality. So they're slay news. It's pretty good. The shots, 50% boost in all-cause mortality. Let's see here. Clinical trials of childhood vaccines, no placebo-controlled long-term trials for even one of them. Not one clinical trial for any of the childhood vaccines will be put through a placebo-controlled long-term trial. Not one. So,
well, we've already determined that they're safe, so why do we need a trial?
That's right. One-third of all exposed to COVID-19. Now, this is the virus. Remember, the virus and the injection are both bioweapons. One-third of all exposed to COVID-19, the virus, are likely to develop brain microbleeds. So brain bleeds are now common. All you have to do is get the virus. This is from Thailand Medical. They do some pretty good work. There's another one here.
Well, we know that this virus does have an impact on the brain, even in mild cases.
Here's another one. German and Swiss study finds that SARS-CoV-2 virus, the virus, the artificial synthetic bioweapon virus, leaves an innate immune scar on the brains of the infected. An innate immune scar on the brains of all the infected. There's another one. COVID-19 virus could possibly be contributing directly and indirectly to the rise of tuberculosis infections. You think? Internal tremors and vibrations and long COVID. 12 babies died during a trial for monoclonal antibodies, and the CDC ignored all of their deaths. Are they even using monoclonal antibodies? I think they pulled three of the four of them off the market, didn't they?
Yeah, I don't think they're using those. They haven't used those for a while.
Well, this is apparently a new effort to reinstate them. I don't know. U.S. admits it spread disinformation about COVID bioweapon death vaccinations. Well, how nice. That was in the Russia Today, RT, site. And will RFK Jr. be Trump's vaccine czar? Well, I'll sleep better at night with that one. Uh-huh. Here's the last little one. U.S. government tanked the economy with COVID lockdowns to gain control over the population through data collection and enforcement. That is a perfect part of this. We have mass death, we have genocide, we also have mass transfer of wealth. They are taking the wealth of most everyone who either is vax injured from the injection or has the virus and ends up being injured as well. They're taking the money from people. They thought this out so carefully. They knew that people were going to become disabled to the extent that they would have to be given full-time care, either at home, which is far too difficult for most families, or they'd have to be warehoused in a assisted living facility or something like that. They have different names for them. Talk about a big business. And when they get you in there, they've got you. And we have a special guest coming on now. His name is Matt. He's from Pennsylvania. His father got injected several times with at least one booster. He went into one of these long-term care facilities, and wait until you hear the story about this. Matt, are you there? Can you hear us okay?
Yes, Jeff, can hear you great. It's a pleasure to speak with you and with Erica.
Thank you.
Hi, Matt.
She's a very special person, and I appreciate you saying that. Couldn't do it without her. All right. Now, your father has gone. He's deceased.
Yes.
Now. He passed away. Can you just go ahead and start at the beginning and let's walk through this? You'll know how to hit the high points. Just go ahead.
Sure. Well, my father was one of those people that would always say he believed the science. If they had told him that this vaccination is safe, he would take it, and he was very in tune with his flu shots every year, with his the shingles vaccine, all of those things. He lived a very organic life. He always ate organic foods, exercised, was very active, and that all changed when he was 80. We have no idea what happened to him. Just one day he collapsed and suffered a traumatic brain injury with no explanation.
He hit the floor. Right.
Yes. He was going to a band concert that he was performing in, and just tipped over, and the people that were there said that, you know, he just kind of went down. Sadly, a few days before that, he was complaining of vertigo symptoms, which, again, no explanation given. The doctors never even cared to take a guess at what would have caused all of this.
Now, let me ask you one quick question. He was organic in his dietary orientation. He took good care of himself, and yet he bought into the AMA, get your shots.
Yes.
He trusted, he's from a different age when the government, when everybody trusted the government, basically, most everyone, as we went through World War II, which he did, you would trust the government. There was a whole different experiential paradigm in play at that time between the public and their elected officials. They believed that the elected officials were there to represent them to the best of their ability, and in many cases they did. But it was still a big power game, ultimately. All right, so he took his shots. How many shots did he get with respect to the COVID issue?
Well, when COVID started going around, if you remember, the nursing homes were a big part of that. And when it started to affect the different nursing homes in the country, the one that he was staying in basically locked the facility down. No one could come in, no one could leave. And then we received the paperwork to authorize the first shot. And you're pretty much stuck between a rock and a hard place. They didn't make it feel like you had any choice as to whether to say no, because I believe they would have made him leave at that point if he did not do it.
Well, that's the big threat. You don't want to play ball? Don't want to follow the rules? You can go somewhere else.
So, in the end, he ended up having both of the series and then all of the follow-up boosters, as well as, again, his flu shot and the shingles shot. They just basically said, you know, you sign this and you'll get the whole gambit of things that he would need.
Now, he was in a facility when the COVID crisis, being facetious, hit, and
correct.
He had to conform to stay in that facility. Is that right?
That is the way that I believe it was. He went there in 2018, and between when he went there, it was really nice. In the beginning, he couldn't eat by himself. He couldn't take care of himself at all. He worked with physical therapists. They had it to where he was able to eat soup with a spoon and push himself in a wheelchair. And then COVID came. And they had the lockdowns and more or less didn't get to see my father for about 2 years.
No, not good. That's not an unusual story. I'll always remember, as long as I live, the picture of, I guess it was a daughter trying to give her dad a kiss through a large plastic drape. They wouldn't let you know the game. Go ahead.
We didn't even have that option. At the point where they would allow people to see their loved ones, the big issue was that you had to provide your COVID shot records to the nursing home before they would even let you in near the facility. And at that point, you were only allowed to have face-to-face from a distance of, I believe it was 20 feet, and it was out in, like, under an awning outside. But you weren't able to do that without the records. For me, the problem was I didn't get the jab, wasn't going to, but I had to lie and say that I had it just so that I could see my father after, you know, again, almost 2 years.
Now Dad is in really good health. He's 80, about. He's playing in a band. He's a musician. I think we talked, and you said he had a PhD as well in chemistry.
Yes.
I think that's what it
was. Yes, he was a research chemist, spent 30-some years working for DuPont. and you know, was a very intelligent person. But like I said, he believed the science. If a scientist or a doctor told him something, he would not challenge it. It was, you know, he was a believer in the system.
When they locked everything down, did he get the virus? Did he catch it? Was it, did it rage through the facility he was in?
Or how he never got it. He was not a sickly person very often. I mean, he would only catch a cold every few years, if that. So it was a surprise he didn't get it. And not that many people there did. But when they did, you know, we would get a note that, you know, someone had COVID, whether it was a resident or a staff member. And then, again, they would immediately go in lockdown for at the very least a month.
Well, it must have been very difficult not to be able to see your dad for 2 years on the basis of him still being so vibrant when he went in there. What was the atmosphere like in the facility? Now, this is a big facility, I understand, and they have apparently these, we'll call them nursing homes, whatever, assisted living, all over the place. It's a big corporation. What was the type of employee? What was the help like? What was the service level when he went in there and got his shots? How was it back then?
In the beginning, it was fantastic. There was a college that was literally right across the street from his nursing home, and they had a nursing program there. So a lot of the students would come and intern at the facility or work at the facility and get credit. And they were some very caring kids that would come over, and they took great care of my dad. The full-time staff that had been there for a number of years were very, very good. And all that changed again after COVID. And, the staff changed. It was almost as if overnight the majority of the staff left, and then they brought in basically an immigrant staff from, different. Yeah, from many came from Ghana, many came from other places like that, and had some language difficulties, communication difficulties, but the majority of the steady staff was gone.
Got it. Now, before we get into the financial aspects of this and how that all ties into my transfer of wealth plan, which was part, I do believe, of this entire pandemic, Erica, anything you want to add here or talk to Matt about that would be helpful? This is, he's one
of millions of
people who have been involved with this.
Yeah. I mean, they became like prisons, really.
They were warehoused, is what it was. And now, there was good help in the beginning, and then it went to third world. And we all know what that happens to lead to in almost every case. Now, you told me something very interesting as well, Matt, that your dad would always ask for bottles of soda, Coke, something like that. I don't want to give any brand promotion here, but he liked his soda, or he wanted soda, but there was maybe more to it than that. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, so when we had first put him there, they had made a very big deal of explaining that hydration for the residents was a big thing for them, that they would make special electrolyte drinks for them, we would be able to supply things. He had a little refrigerator. Wow. So they would call and say, hey, your dad is running low on caffeine-free Diet Coke. Could you bring him a couple cases? So, we would bring them and, stock his shelves and things like that. And then all of a sudden you started to notice that, again, after COVID, that he was having issue with cognitive things where, you know, he would have a bad day and he would start talking as if it was 1953 and asking me about baseball games. And we started to notice a very direct correlation between drinking and his mental status. And it was becoming rather obvious that he was getting dehydrated. And even though all the drinks were there, nobody was giving it to him.
I'll bet it must have looked like his room sometimes hadn't even been visited.
No, they would clean the room about once a week. And, you know, I will give them points for having a very clean facility compared to others. You know, one of the things, though, like I said, they prided themselves on, you know, making sure that they were fed, making sure they were clean, making sure they were hydrated. But there were times where, you know, no phone call would come in. I would go over, look in his pantry, and it was, you know, just roughly the same amount of drinks were in there than when I left. You know, times I would go in and he wouldn't have a drink cup or anything like that. And it always seemed to, again, correlate with a period of mental decline.
Got it. Erica, what about dehydration and mental acuity?
Well, yeah, it would be something to watch out for.
He should have been checked routinely,
I would think. You know, I don't know if it's just, you know, laziness on the part of the staff, because the more they drink, the more they urinate. Comes to mind.
Well, at least the facility was clean from what Matt's telling us. Okay. Now, he's got three or four shots in him, the COVID variety. He's in a facility that's been locked down. You at one point were allowed to visit with him outside. I guess it was outside on the deck or something. You said that they'd bring him out in a wheelchair and then put tape on the ground. That's another little vignette I'd like to hear.
Oh, yes. When we were finally allowed to visit, it had to be outdoors, and then they had set an area aside as like the visiting area, and there was tape across the ground, again, spaced about 10 feet. And they told you that, you know, you had to stay in your chair at the one end. You weren't allowed to have any physical contact with your loved one. And then, you know, I hadn't seen my dad at that point for good probably 8 months. And they wheeled him out, and, you know, he had a N95 mask on. And, you know, he kept trying to take it off, and they would keep running out to put it back on him. And,
outside.
You know, oh, yes, outside. And when he, you know, we finally were there alone, it was not my dad. He had suffered a terrible mental decline, just became non-communicative, would just sit there and stare. I'd ask him questions, he wouldn't respond, whereas, you know, before COVID hit and the shots, he would, you know, would talk and we would have good meetings. So it was really alarming to see that.
That's heartbreaking is what it is. The idea that the shots can impact the brain in terms of dementia, ALS, prion disease, CJD, he had been injected at that point, what, a year or two?
Yes.
Something like that? Okay. Well, there's plenty of time for things to have begun to assert themselves in his cognition. Okay. For all of you out there who are going through similar things right now, you'll understand this. But for those of you who haven't and may have family members who are sliding inexorably into having a distinct and undeniable need for extra care that you can't give, you're going to be facing similar things to what you're about to hear about. The idea of expense. To put an ambulatory person in an assisted care facility now is usually $3,500 a month to $5,000 a month. In this case, tell us the financial paradigm, what you had to deal with, and how you dealt with it. This is a shocker. I'm not going to get to the big punchline yet, but go right ahead.
Well, when we moved him in, in 2018. I want to say that the monthly charge for the year, the monthly charge was around $13,000 a month.
What level of care in 20? I'm sorry, Matt. What level of care in 2018 would he have been termed to have needed then?
At that time, he needed the highest. Oh, I'm sorry. He had needed the highest level at that point, which was medication given to him with proper intervals, being showered once a week, being cleaned whenever they would have to Hoyer lift him in and out of bed each time.
Okay. All right. So he was getting the most complete care that you give somebody in that position. All right. I just want to make that clear. That's 2018. And you're looking at how much a month?
Oh, at that point, I want to say it was around $13,000 per month. Okay. And then, unfortunately, as time went on, services declined, but the price kept going up. The last bills that we had when 2024 came around, the price had jumped up to $17,500 a month.
Boy,
it's astonishing. How is it as a society? I don't want to get off into this, but we've gotten to the point where we can do this to our senior citizens. We can take that much money from them. How is this paid? Did he have any kind of health care, any coverage? Was there any Medicare, Medicaid? Was there anything? How did the money get put into the hands of these ghouls?
Well, basically, when we went to tour the facility and we sat down and the money part came up, they told us this is what it costs, this is what he would need. You'll be basically cash customers because there was no anything that would cover him because he wasn't, indigent at the time where he would qualify for any kind of, free treatment or anything like that. And they more or less told us that, if you don't pay, we throw you out.
Or if you don't get your shots, they'll throw you out. And he took several shots, at least a couple, and then two boosters, I think you said. Maybe we'll figure four shots. COVID shots, okay. And he went downhill, quite frankly, from what you're saying, in that period of time after the shots, very substantially, almost not recognizing you.
No, I there were many times I don't think he knew who I was. He would make mention of things that made me think that he believed I was his brother. But then we would have other good days where, he would know who I was. And again, I think a big part of that dealt with the care. Was he being hydrated? Mm-hmm. Was he being taken care of? It was very, very disheartening at times. They would call you if he had the slightest scratch or bump on his head, and say, hey, just to let you know this happened. And then towards the end, they had called and said, hey, just out of the blue, hey, your dad needs to go on hospice because he lost 40 pounds. And it just raises questions that they can't explain, which was, well, how did you not know he was losing 40 pounds? And I couldn't get an answer for that either.
For all of you out there who are, again, facing this situation, and many of you will, you have to be there. Somehow you've got to monitor the care, especially if you've got third world people being brought in now. It's just a fact. You know the game. So 40 pounds, that's a massive loss of weight. And they reported the little bumps and things to you because they were afraid of being sued. I think that's pretty clear. Abuse, that kind of talk. I'm sure that was in your mind.
And I agree wholeheartedly with what you said about you have to be there. And prior to COVID, I would go see him, it's sometimes 5 days a week. On the weekends, I would always go over and have dinner with him. And so, you know, it was very easy to check on the level of care that he was getting at that time. But again, the problem is once they lock down the facility and you're not allowed to go visit, you have no idea what's going on behind closed doors.
Got it. I can only hope that maybe in his mind he was living back in 1953 when things were great in this country. And he was perhaps mentally in a good place. I don't know. All right. The cost, $17,000 plus per month, ladies and gentlemen. And this had to be cash payments. Okay? So how did they, and I look at this again as a ghoulish kind of vampirism of taking people's wealth. Where did you get the money, Matt, to pay for Dad's care? How did that come out?
Well, my dad had a pension between that and his Social Security that was coming around between $4,000 and $5,000 a month. The rest of the money had to all come out of an investment account that we maintained. When you sat down and figured out the cost, even with what he had in the investment account, the real panic came in, and you hate doing this, but you think, well, my dad won't live that long that you know, we would go through all of this. Never would I have expected that my dad would have hung in there till, you know, 89. Luckily, we had a good financial advisor, and I told him that, you know, we needed to make money, you know, to cover these medical costs, and we did well working together, but it almost came like a full-time job, you know, trading stocks and, you know, where can we get this money from, and, you know, it calling up and saying, hey, I need $50,000 to cover the next couple months of care.
Wow. Full-time job for you and your wife to do this.
Yes.
And many of you out there, again, are going to face this exact thing, or your loved one will be home with you, and you'll be trying to give 24-hour care. It's just, these things are not cheap, and I, again, look at it as fleecing, robbing, stealing, purloining from the senior class. They just take their wealth back that they've worked their entire lives to aggregate. It's sickening. All right. Erica, anything here? I'm going to get to the big punchline here in a minute. Anything you want to add?
No, keep going. You know, I've heard these types of stories, you know, more than a few times. They're tragic. Right. Because
horrible.
You do have to be vigilant and, you know, you'd like to relax a little bit and think you could trust these people, but sadly it's not the case, especially now.
No, worse than ever. Well, we've heard Nurse Anne describe these third worlders that come over and they're just not trained. They don't have it. All right, Matt. The total aggregate sum in round numbers, to take care of your dad beginning in 2018 and then into the COVID area, and he got the shots and seems to have stood up fairly well against three, four, five shots. I don't know how many he got, but what's the total cost we're looking at to take care of one senior citizen, a loved family member in this country right now? What did it cost you? What did it cost your dad?
Over a six-year period, it cost my dad slightly over $1 million.
I'm going to let that sink in out there. My point is, unless you have assets, you're going to be facing some very unpleasant circumstances. That's tough. $1 million. Wow. How did your wife handle all this? Without her, obviously, it's a two-person job, I'm sure.
Yeah, my wife was great throughout the whole thing. She was the objective one when we went place to place and evaluated where we wanted to put him because, yeah, I don't think I was objective enough because it's my dad. Sure. You know, so I needed her very much for that. You know, it becomes overwhelming. You know, I know for her it was, you know, probably almost more difficult at times for her to see my dad decline. You know, than it was for me. I would come up with excuses for, you know, why we would see this or that, and mm-hmm. She would kind of ground it and say, you know, well, he's 89 years old. You know, that's what happens.
Right. All right. Well, you've been through, both of you, and Dad, through what we call end of life, the ritual here. I look at it as honestly a transfer of wealth, and it's just part of the evil, the satanic evil of this whole process. It shouldn't be like this at all.
You know, and the workers that are actually doing this, the so-called heavy lifting, the hands-on work, are in many cases being paid a pittance. So, you know, they're not getting wealthy off of this. Where's the money going? Well, the administrators, right?
I'm sure.
At the end of the day, the worst part was my dad had passed away towards the end of February. I want to say it was around like the 22nd. I got a call the next day from the facility, and they said, "Hey, are you coming over to get all your dad's things?" Because, you know, now that he's gone, you know, you're going to incur charges on the room. You need to come get his stuff, which, you know, again, you sit there and you just lost a loved one. I'm talking to funeral homes. I'm, you know, trying to figure out where we're going to get his body taken. And they're hounding me the first day of when are you going to come and deal with all of his stuff?
Pretty damn ruthless, to put it mildly. Anything you'd like to add to this? You really did a great job laying this out. Thank you, Matt, for that, because it's something that most everyone out there is going to face and maybe are right now. Anything else you want to put on the table here?
No, just, you know, when it comes to your loved ones and your aging family members, you know, love them while you have the opportunity to do so, because the time goes by fast and you never know, you know, what's going to go on and what's going to happen.
Beautifully said. Very good. Matt, thank you very much. Give our best to your wife as well. We really appreciate it. Thank you for sharing.
I will. Thank you both. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you, Matt. Good night.
That goes along with what I've been trying to say also for years, is that it doesn't have to be a senior member of the family, your children, whatever. If you're close and you have a family, every day is a blessing. And if your kids have been shot up, any day they could be gone. Anybody who's been shot up, not to mention shedding, we know about that too, all too well. So take the opportunity to let those around you that you care about and you love, let them know. Tell them. Get that in the record book, so to speak, while you've got time. This is an unmercifully brutal series of shots, and now we're finding out more and more about getting the bioweapon virus. If you get that virus 2, 3, 4 times, you're probably facing things that are going on in your body right now that you don't want to even think about. You couldn't even think about. It's not a good situation. Anyway, there it is, the average, maybe not the average, but it's certainly an average profile. If he hadn't had that money that he worked all his life for, that he would have much rather left to his son and his wife, it had to go
that's not uncommon, but you know, at least he got in there during a time when
before it was standing room only. Now I know.
Well, and it was a legitimate operation for the most part. Now it's
warehouse.
It's part of a death protocol.
Warehoused.
Yeah, warehouse, or just accelerating people's demise, really.
Wow. All right. Well,
and
I
look at these people. I mean, at least that's an option, you know, people with means. But look at the people now whose family members have come down things like ALS, where the person becomes increasingly incapacitated, and they don't have the means to put them into some kind of facility, and then they're trying to do it all on their own. We have people in the CJD group in that situation, and they're just, you know, if you're not a medical professional, you're really at a loss as to how to deal with that situation.
It's going to wipe out more and more families financially, because if mom or dad gets old and gets shot up and ends up being disabled, injured, wounded, crippled from these shots and or the virus, and there's no money to take care of them, or if you just have a little bit.
Well, this is how they're going to usher in euthanasia. I mean, I don't know if you've seen the latest with these pods over in Switzerland.
Yeah.
$20, and you can go in and kill yourself. $20.
And what do they do with the remains? Do we know?
They bathe you in nitrogen, and I guess it takes all of 5 minutes.
Well, that brings up biosludge and the liquefaction of human corpses and all kinds of things that we could talk for a long time about here. It's just not a good situation. Except,
well, the fact that they're driving people towards that, you know, rather than treating these injuries.
Correct. They know. They know what's coming.
It's pretty blatant what's going on.
Right. Okay. Well, hopefully that was educational. We haven't covered that particular subject in such detail before. But it's very important. All right, let's jump over to our human chronicles here, COVID chronicles. July 26th, we still have several there that we haven't done. And we can move on from there if you want. COVID long hauler. And then there's two MCS stories, MCS.
Yeah.
So go ahead, COVID long hauler. Go ahead.
Okay. Now, this was written back in 2021, and this was from the moderator of the COVID Long Haulers group, which I didn't realize this, but there are vax-injured people in the Long Haulers group, even though it's technically for people who were infected with the virus. This group was formed very early on in the pandemic, and it was for people who became infected and just, for whatever reason, couldn't shake it. Okay, January 2021, she asked, or writes, starting this post to share members' personal stories at the request of several members. We need to keep them in one chain so they don't overwhelm the educational posts. Before you read, be forewarned, the stories may be overwhelming. Well, 288 people replied. Today is over 8 weeks since I tested positive, and I cannot get out of bed with a headache that is on top of my head. My head feels like it is in a freezer, like very cold. My eyes feel like they are going to bulge out of my head. The pain started at the base of my skull, and pain goes up to the top of my head, only on my left side. Prior to COVID, I never had headaches. Now I get them all the time. But today is absolutely the worst headache I have had. I also have the brain fog. I cannot complete sentences. I cannot think straight. Emotional, like from 0 to 10 for no reason. I have a racing heart. My body temperature control is all over the place. I burn up 1 minute, I'm freezing the next. I still have a cough. My chest is painful.
Let me say something about that. I still have a cough. Erica and I notice, and I think many of you may already, if you don't, there are a lot of people out there who have the COVID cough. You go into any store, you're going to hear somebody coughing. So just beware. Go ahead.
My chest is painful. My ribs feel like I'm being squeezed. I am so fatigued. I could sleep 17 to 18 hours a day. My hips hurt. Every joint aches, but hips are a huge pressure point. I am so weak, muscle weakness. I do believe this was my second time within the year. Now, bear in mind, this is January 2021, so the shots really hadn't, I mean, they were just rolled out to healthcare workers.
Yeah, this is the virus.
A month right. prior. So this person is not vaxxed. This is not a vax issue.
Mm-hmm.
This is COVID. I believe I had it at the back of January, back in January of 2020. I had a coworker that went to Mexico and came back sick, and then I got it. I went back and read my Facebook post, and I was sick with all the symptoms and sick for almost 9 days. That was before testing. Then I tested positive in November. This time I was sick for 3 weeks, and I was in and out of the ER. Starting today, I'm going to journal everything from the good, the bad, and the ugly. I do have good days in between, and I think I have hope, and then boom. Nope, not the case. I'm right back to feeling like I have no life. I feel hopeless and feel like no one will listen or understand. I just want my life back. Anyone else with a similar experience?
Oh, we hear this all the time. All right, here's another post from MCS Long COVID Recovery.
All right, I think we should probably explain that MCS, multiple chemical sensitivity, is not uncommon following infection with this virus, and of course, to say nothing about the vaccine or shedding.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people end up with becoming overly sensitive to things in the environment, and they just overreact. And that can include chemicals or, I mean, like the, you name it, all kinds of synthetics and toxins that are in the modern environment, and also EMFs. A lot of people that have had the virus, the infection, become sensitive to EMFs. So this is somewhat of a positive post, and that somebody was able to manage it and improve.
All right. In January, I had my doctor start treating long COVID because of intense brain fog. I was desperate. I found little relief mentally, but felt better physically. Then I met my deductible and asked her to test the MTHFR genes, which are, do we know what they are? Does it matter?
Oh, methylation, that's your ability to, well, for among other things, to detoxify. And
okay.
People tend to focus on that a lot, and that's not a diagnosis. It's just a susceptibility issue.
I experience every common possible symptom, fatigue, brain fog, pain, shortness of breath. I have compound heterozygous mutations and follow a good diet. I added NAC and methylfolate to my glutathione and methylated B12 and cut out anything that could be fortified. Almost 3 weeks later, I am having minimal sensitivity issues, although I am cautious. I have more energy than I've had in 10 years, and I feel like my brain is coming out of a coma. I just wanted to share that lots of things have helped me, such as
meditation.
Meditation, tapping. Tapping. Supposedly,
yeah.
If you tap in the right spots, it's kind of like.
It's calming.
Right. Kind of like this. Like that. Right, I got it. I'm calmer already. I have more energy than I've had in 10 years, and I feel like my brain is coming out of a coma. I just wanted to share this. Lots of things have helped me, such as meditation, tapping, therapy, massage, but changing my supplements seem to work wonders. So NAC is a big one that everybody should be, I think, aware of, and we'd like to see most everyone on that. You want to finish this up here? Go ahead.
Sure. Okay. the moderator of this group, says, that sounds promising. In the world of MCS, many factors contribute to our current state and what we need to do to improve it. Through determination and extensive research, some individuals discover the perfect combination of remedies that can lift them up and bring relief. While your supplements may not have the same impact on others, they have proven to be effective for you. Someone adds, I found liposomal glutathione to be a miracle supplement. I didn't have MCS when I took it, but felt decades younger when I took it for about 3 months, alongside liquid zeolite, to help with metals and mold. I was in late 60s and painted outside of my house by myself. I hadn't thought I was feeling bad until I felt so good.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there may be a salt component, too.
Mm-hmm.
Still trying to figure it out.
All right, here's someone who isn't doing so well. Myocarditis and pericarditis after COVID vaccine support. This is the name of a group. It's crazy. 2 years later, I'm back to feeling how I did in month one. My condition has gone full circle just because of stress and overworking myself earlier this month. This time last year, I was fully recovered. It just makes no sense to me at all. And there are two comments. It's like autoimmune. You feel like you get better, turn flare, or it comes back. What is turn flare?
I don't know.
Ah, we stumped you finally. Okay. I've resigned
well,
myself.
Well, there's flares. They say flares. You know, you have a worsening of your symptoms.
Yes, I have several of those each program. I've resigned myself to accepting this is my life from now on. That's a very difficult thing, especially if someone is a fighter, a producer, a creator, a worker, to have to resign yourself, to finally give up and say this is the way it's going to be. And one last comment, how sad and depressing. We're trying to move forward, but this thing keeps right at us. All right, well, it's a very complicated issue, this whole damn story. Not a joke. All right, well, we've covered a lot of ground for you tonight. We thank again Matt and his wife for coming on and sharing that story about something that will be all too close to many of our listeners here before this is eventually over. And I guess the big question is, will it ever be really over? Or is it now endemic to our physiology, our species, biophysiology?
Well, you know, the other part of this agenda is not just, you know, sucking the money out of, you know, a family, but it's getting people into the system, you know, getting them to a point where they need medical services for one reason or another. And, you know, then they've got you. They've got your ID.
Know,
they know your medical history.
Yep.
They know your vulnerabilities. You know, it's, I think, you know, a means of getting people into the surveillance system.
Oh, it's profiling all the way. They know what they're doing.
And getting you dependent on them.
Thoroughly.
So, you know, whatever you can do to stay out of that for as long as you can, I think the better off you'll be.
Here's one, last one on shedding. We always like to keep you updated on that. Someone wrote in, shedding is real. I used to be just like you, thinking it was all BS until I had a sexual encounter with a condom with someone who took the shot. I had symptoms that lasted for almost 3 weeks, and I knew it was real ever since. And no, it wasn't an STD either. I don't get much shedding symptoms when I'm just simply around the vaxxed, except for headaches. However, some get violently ill just from that. We all react differently. And just because you may not do that doesn't mean it's untrue. Some get it very difficult and hard. Some get it less hard, but it's real nonetheless. So do keep that in mind. And again, this is not to put down anyone who's been injected at all. We just want people to understand the risks. And they're quite real, quite real. You decide. It's up to you. We're not here to tell you what to do. Okay, anything to add to that?
No, no.
Well, that was a very interesting report. And
yeah.
We'll keep on it. Okay, thank you. Good night, young lady.
Okay, Jeff, thank you. Okay. Good night, everyone.
And we will pause on that note and come right back with more. Hold on.